Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hi. How are you today?
Well, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thank you so much for asking.
I'm just excited to be here, Kristen, here at the top of season 6, episode 2. What a time to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get started, just a handful of announcements and reminders to run down. First and foremost, with regard to the chronology of our ongoing series, we have a live taping of the next episode of Buffering, of season 6, episode 3, Afterlife. That's going to be this Saturday, October 24th at 6 p.m. Eastern. Tickets are available now at bit.ly/BuffyAfterlife, or you can head to our calendar of events at bufferingthevampireslayer.com and click events. It's awfully close to Halloween is all I'll say about what we might be wearing to the taping. It'll be a very fun live event. We did a live event like this. We did like a streaming live taping a while back, and it was super, super, super fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun time. We had a lot of fun on the first live stream taping, and I have to say that like the energy around these parts is pretty wacky, so I'm going to just go ahead and guess that we're going to have a damn good time. And the fun of seeing us live is that, you know, we could do or say things that were like, heavens, and we take out of the main episode, but you, live viewer, you will get to witness the entire show.
The full Monty. The full yes. Jenny and Kristen. Cool.
Bookending our live taping of Afterlife, we have our second anti-racism reading and discussion group. The first is literally tomorrow, October 22nd. Mickey Kendall's Hood Feminism is the book that Mac has chosen for us to go through. And the way we're structuring the reading and discussion groups this time is that tomorrow will be Mac talking to us and us doing a Q&A with Mac. So it's going to be really, really fun. Mac, if you haven't listened to Mac speak already, you really should get on that train, boat, ship, bus, whatever. She's
a space rocket.
Yeah, she's really, really incredible. And this is important, important work that we're all doing together here as a community. Thursday, October 29th, both of these, by the way, are 7:30 p.m. Eastern. So next Thursday, we'll be gathering again, and this time doing small breakout groups. So we'll be in groups of, you know, 6 to 10 people at most, and just getting to really talk about some of the things that the book brings up, and the ways that that intersects with like our lives, and also the way that it intersects with a little show you may have heard of called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You can learn more and register for one or both of those sessions at bufferingthevampireslayer.com/justkeepfighting.
And now,
oh boy, it's really just your jam for this season.
Is that sexy music? It's time for the Sexual Tension Award results.
They would all consider it sexy music if they could have seen the dance you did while you were doing it.
Nobody needs to see that.
Another reason to come to our live taping this Saturday.
Yeah. Well, you get to witness firsthand my
shoulder shimmy.
My shoulder work is noted. Mm-hmm. It's legendary. So, Sexual Tension Awards for Bargaining Part 1, you're welcome in advance. Wow, with a very sad 3% of the vote in fourth place, it's 2 tan coats, 1 small area of cubic feet, Giles and Xander. 3%, fourth place, really harsh. Okay, then, you know, given our listenership, I thought this would have landed maybe a little bit higher up because it has, I think, two things that a lot of our listeners really like.
Mm-hmm.
Giles and spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. Somehow, third place, only a mere 12%
of the vote. It was a hard split.
It
was a hard split. It was, but you know, there was a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. Okay. So then in second place, we have, with 26% of the vote, Xander Harris and the Backstreet Boys, including Nick Carter, and also probably including Nick Lachey.
Yes, they're both, I think they're both
understood
in the Backstreet Boys.
When you say they're both in the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, yeah, no, totally, 100%.
And sweeping first place with 59% of the vote, it's two... it's a banger and a mash, or two bangers, one mash. It's Spike and Giles.
Wow. Let's get out of here quick.
Yes.
Congratulations,
farewell.
Spike and Giles. We will send your bangers and your mash in the mail. And moving right along, I just want to tell you a couple of things about products in our store. In case you missed it, we have the Sleepaway Witch Camp design on a pullover sweatshirt now in the US and the UK stores, which is pretty exciting. Our CDs are in stock, but hey, now also the signed CDs are in stock. You might even get an errant cat or dog hair with yours. You know, they've been in both of our homes, loved and signed by us and our pets.
Frank stepped on at least one CD,
yeah,
so
Gus,
look out for that.
Gus knocked over every single tower of CDs that I made. So they've been loved. There's also our new design by A. Andrews, the Burn It Down t-shirt, which I think really speaks to how many of us are feeling. We're going to talk about that in a second. And I want to alert you that for Halloween, we are releasing a special new design from Izzy Rotman. You know Isabella from Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy and her brilliant fucking tarot deck. If you don't know it, you need to. So, you know, we've been working with Izzy on a couple of projects. One is going to be released on Halloween.
Hooray.
Yeah, so, you know, follow our socials because that's how we will tell you about it. Buffering Cast across all Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And just a reminder, friendly little reminder, that our $10 patrons get 20% off merchandise all the time, every day. And they also get advance announcements on things that go up in the store. So if it's like a hot ticket item, they get first grabs at it. Anyway, onwards and upwards, Jenny. Oh, you can find the store at bufferingthevampireslayer.com. And, you know, just click on shop. You know how to find these things. Come on. You don't need my help anymore.
And now it appears we've reached the portion of the shared intro Google Doc that is titled Osiris's Phallus.
Yeah, don't read ahead. I want to read it to you.
Okay.
So on the day that we got 500,012 emails about the Backstreet Boys and our just atrocious Nick error of 2020, I also got an email entitled Osiris's Phallus that made me laugh so fucking hard. Like, it was already such a fun and funny and insane day. It was also such a fun and funny and ridiculous day that this just really tipped the scales for me. Here's a tidbit for you from Lauren. I hope this email finds you well and that the subject line was enough to grab you. Lauren, it was. Your mention of Osiris in the previous episode was enough to awaken the deeply buried 10-year-old within me that was absolutely obsessed with Egyptian mythology. Forget horse girl, I was a jackal-headed god girl. I don't know if you were aware... But a few more details about the Osiris myth. After Set murdered Osiris, dismembered his body into 14 pieces, and scattered them across Egypt, Isis did manage to find most of the body. You can probably see where this is going. However,
oh no!
There was one part of the body that was forever lost, his penis, which was swallowed by either a fish or a crocodile, depending on what version of the myth you are reading. I'm going to continue, Jenny.
Oh, dear.
Jenny is agog. Not one to be discouraged, however, Isis created a replacement phallus for Osiris.
Oh, hell yeah. Queer culture steps in.
Potentially out of either wood or wax, which allowed them to have sex and for Isis to be able to conceive their son, Horus. My question to you, do you think Willow and Tara would have had a wooden dildo to go with their crystal one? Hell yeah. Well, I mean, no, because
splinters.
Yeah, you gotta really at least shellac that sucker if you're gonna, because
the risks are too great.
Yeah, but amazing information about Osiris. I mean, love to hear a crocodile swallowing a phallus replaced with a dildo Greek myth. You know what I mean? Just as hot as they come.
Truly. Yeah, that's so great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, don't thank me. Thank Lauren.
Sorry, that was directed at Lauren, but also you, the messenger.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so we're about to roll into the episode. I want to just say that we've gotten a few other emails from you this week about going in to vote. Today is October 21st, 2020, and I have voted. I voted early. Jenny, have you voted?
I have voted.
We have voted. We have voted not only in Sexual Tension Award nominations, but in our United States election here. And we've gotten a lot of emails from you all saying just like really very heartfelt and wonderful things about playing Prophecy Girl as you drive to, you know, go and cast your early votes. And some of you are listening to the podcast just for the first time and are hitting the episode that we posted the day after the election 4 years ago and have written in and being like, whoa, this is like very bizarre to listen to right now. I think, you know, we're in a spot where we are having a lot of feelings. This is a really hard time. And because we were, I mean, I feel like, Jenny, we were like born in the election of 2016, you know, like we had done a handful of episodes and it really shaped a community here and has continued to shape and inform the work that we do. And so we just wanted to like give a little space for that and to let you know that we are here and we really acknowledge the many different emotional spaces that many of you are sitting in right now. And just to let you know, that we're like reaching our little hands across the divide and squeezing yours.
Yeah. And whatever happens, we'll still be here to say things, very stupid things into your ears every other week, gently and with compassion. And we love you. And Frank loves you.
Sam and Gus would like you to know that they feel mostly love and sometimes ambivalence towards you. But, you know.
Sure, sure.
Nothing if not consistent. And you're right. We will be here. We'll be here on November 4th as our next episode. So we're going to keep on squeezing your hands. We're going to keep on doing the work. And I think that we all know that no matter what happens over the next couple of weeks, we have a lot of fucking work to do. No matter what happens, the work is going to continue. And we're here and committed to that. And also just want to thank you all for the work that you continue to do and for the sort of inspiration and energy that you bring to us in that work and in that community and connection. And also to give a really special thank you to Mac and Alba specifically, who came on at a time when we wanted to take the work to new and different places and have just been such a wonderful presence in the universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, to that end, I guess we could roll on over to, you know, a Slayer digging herself out of her own grave. That seems on theme.
It's about right. Yeah. Yeah.
We really love you.
Let's do it. And welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer one by one, spoiler free. I am undisputed number one champion knowledge king about Nick Lachey, a member of 98 Degrees and former spouse of Jessica Simpson. I've known it all along. He is brunette. He actually kind of has like a general, if he was somebody on Buffy, he would be Angel. I'm Jenny Owen Youngs.
I am Kristen Russo. The internet disagrees with you. We've had a lot of people positing that Nick Lachey is actually much more akin to a Riley. I am incredibly well-versed, very much new all the time, still know, new in the 90s, and know now that Nick Carter is a member of the Backstreet Boys, brother to Aaron Carter. Would never, ever get them confused, would we, Jenny?
Not ever. Now that you mention it, Nick Lachey is kind of Angel's hair stitched onto Riley's face.
Yeah. Which sort of like, you know, begs the question, did we mess up Nick Lachey and Nick Carter? Or did you want to posit that Xander's choice would actually be Nick Lachey given his resemblance to Riley?
Oh.
And Angel.
Yep. Yep.
You know?
You think Nick Lachey's got a lot of crescent wrenches laying around, just waiting to be borrowed?
Man, it's season six and we can't even get through a goddamn intro over here. This week, hey, we're going to finish this doubleheader episode with season six, episode two, Bargaining Part Two. You should stay tuned at the end of this podcast every other week for an original song written by Jenny, recapping the Buffy episode that we are discussing.
Bargaining Part 2 was written by David Fury, directed by David Grossman, and originally aired on Davetober 2nd, 2001. Because the all the Davids. October 2nd. God, Kristen's staring at me like she's never heard me do really horrific wordplay before.
This is the one where, according to IMDb, as the Hellions continue to ravage Sunnydale, Buffy claws her way out of her own grave and must come to the aid of her friends. God, if that's not, if that doesn't sum it up. Buffy has to, let me just read that again. Buffy claws her way out of her own grave and must come to the aid of her friends. That's where we're at. Kids, season six.
Here we are. Hey, I'm wondering if they produced this previously on after the fact for like when the show was in syndication, because this aired back to back with part one.
You know what? You did, Jenny. And I actually, for the first time in the season, watched season six, episode two on the DVDs. And what I found is that there is no season six, episode two on the DVDs. I actually had to fast forward through one long episode. There is no break. So there's no way that there was previously on in real time, because this just aired straight up like one giant movie of an episode. And I didn't even see the previously on because I watched the DVDs. Was there anything good in there?
No, it was just like, you know, this, that, the other. Buffy's dead, Buffy's back, Osiris, the urn, etc., bikers, whatnot.
I love really jumping ahead here, but maybe love is the wrong word, but I did think it was a notable character choice that Xander refers to the urn of Osiris as the urn of cirrhosis, given the fact that cirrhosis is a disease of the liver, often affects alcoholics, and we know that Xander has parents who are alcoholics.
Oh, yeah. And also, wasn't his liver impacted by his paranormal syphilis infection?
Oh, my God. You're right. Man, Xander, the liver of the Scoobies. Everybody says he's the heart. Liver alone. Sorry, I had to do it.
Wow.
Sorry. Anyway, the Hellions have gotten, their first, like the first line that we hear is them saying to the Buffy bot, "I'll service you, girl toy." I don't know that we're gonna say all the things that they say in this episode, because it's pretty fucking gross. And you know, not that this show hasn't touched on themes of like sexual assault, but I think that they're going a little hard on this here episode in a way that we haven't seen.
This is the first thing. This is some UPN9 shit. Well, it's UPN9 where I grew up. I don't know.
Yeah, I know it's
different
UPN9
depending
too,
on where you're from. But UPN had slightly different. Like, I feel like the show gets racier. Like the language in the show gets more entendre-y, or mm-hmm. just more like overtly sexual.
Yeah.
Or
but in
whatever.
Like an aggressively bad way. Like in an aggressively violent way.
In this
way.
Instance, it's yeah. bad.
Yes. Yes.
What I remember from my last watch of season six is that, like, just in general, whether it's like bad stuff like this or like mm-hmm. sexy time stuff, it's
yeah.
all
yeah.
You
know, it was interesting
11.
Talking to LaToya last week about sort of Angel being on the WB and like Angel, the show, trying to establish itself, and then thinking about that. Because, you know, I mean, I think about things in terms of like, you know, who's Faith going to make out with, how many buttons are going to pop off. It's not as common mm-hmm. for me to think about where the show was in the sort of like in the canon of television right now, and what it was thinking about. And was it thinking like, okay, we've done five seasons. Who are we appealing to? We're on a different network. We need to be more adult. We need to like appeal to more adult themes, like all of these things that were happening behind the scenes.
I wonder too, if it's just like the network, like the suits, the censors, whoever was in charge of like saying like, oh, you're gonna need to edit this, if it was just kind of a different vibe at UPN. They were like, cool dad, you only see him every other weekend, but he's like, drink all the soda you want.
So, and also I just like the suits and the censors is really good. The suits and the censors. So Something that occurred to me at the top of this episode, Jenny, and I'm sure that we've said some version of this before, but the fact that, right, season 6, episode 1, Buffy is not alive and Willow is sort of the leader of the group, and we hear that. But in this episode, Willow is not okay at all. She is passed out and can't really walk. And Xander takes over. And, you know, I mean, there's a couple of things, and I'm sure we'll talk about them, but overall, I feel like all three of these core Scoobies, because I would consider Buffy, Xander, and Willow like the core three, they are all leaders in their own right. Like, they are all characters who, if the shit hits the fan, they're able to say, like, okay, you do this, you do that, you go here, whatever. They don't hesitate. Mm-hmm. And we see that from Xander in this first scene. And I think in this episode, Xander is, he brings up a lot of good points. Right now, it's not so much a point that Xander brings to the table. It's just that he is very much like, he's very like reassuring, but in a very like forceful way. Forceful makes it seem negative, but it's like Tara is really struggling with the fact that Willow is not okay. And the roles were reversed when they were doing the spell. It was Tara who was like, she's fine, Xander, like, let her be. But now that Willow is passed out and the spell has gone wrong, or so we think, Xander's the one that's sort of saying to Tara, like, listen, we have to split up, and I know you want to be with Willow, but I can carry her, so I need to carry her, and I'm going to take her, right? And I think that, yeah, like, you know, patriarchy aside, Xander is stronger and can carry Willow, and Willow needs somebody to carry her.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, when you look back after you've trekked across your burning town under siege from a motorcycle club comprised mostly of demons with a few human members, you look back and you see one set of footprints and you say, Xander, you abandoned me. And Xander says, no, that's when I carried you.
Wow.
And then he takes two pennies. He takes two pennies. Hooray.
Well, while Jenny continues her stand-up routine.
What the hell?
That's good. I didn't even know where you were going, and I was just, like, patiently waiting for the joke. I was like, hey, where are we going? it was great. A great ride had by all. They decide, again, effectively, to leave the Buffy bot. They can't save the Buffy bot. They know this. You know, leaving behind the Buffy bot, of course, is not as simple as just leaving behind a robot. And the way that they utilize the Buffy bot to show us the Scoobies, like, moving on, needing to move past the death of Buffy, needing to let go of Buffy, are throughout this episode. And this is the first time in this part two where we see it, where they're saying leave Buffy bot behind. But what they really mean is, we didn't bring her back to life. We have to let her go.
Yeah.
Oh.
No. But don't worry, because 6 feet under the ground, two tiny little fists are about to start tip-tip-tapping on heaven's door.
Tip-tip-tapping on heaven's door.
Yeah.
It's more like claw-claw-clawing at heaven's door. This is rough.
It's hard to watch, and it goes on. A lot of things happen in between the various cuts of Buffy. First open-handedly, then like tapping on mm-hmm. the coffin, and then like clawing the fabric, and then eventually punching a hole, and then getting dirt rained on her, et cetera, et cetera.
Not to get too like morbid too quick, but we are in an episode where Buffy literally digs herself out of her own coffin, so I feel it is connected. But this, the first thing that I was thinking about when she was digging herself out of her own grave was, if you are a person who wants to get buried and you are going to be in a coffin, would you consider perhaps asking to be buried with a tool or two? Because what if you come back to life and you find yourself in this predicament? Wouldn't it have been nice if Buffy had been buried with, you know, like a hammer or a shovel or, you know, anything to help her get out of the coffin?
Well, you know, I think that would have been helpful for Buffy, but I have bad news for regular mortals.
Mm.
I did a little research, and this is actually something that's been myth-busted by Mythbusters, largely, I think, inspired by Kill Bill Part 2, which features a very similar scene and also came out like 3 years after this episode of Buffy.
Little copy and donut, a little plagiarism.
You know,
keep to your
own Tarantino's influences notoriously include Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That scene was the first thing I thought of when I was watching this, and I was interested to see that it came out after this ep, consider, you know, a few years later. And I think probably a few more people saw Kill Bill Part 2 than Buffy Bargaining Part 2. Yeah. And a lot of those people wrote into Mythbusters and asked, could a person punch their way through a coffin and then, like, dig up through the dirt? Okay, so this is what Mythbusters found. Are you ready?
Oh, my God. How did they bust this myth? Did they put somebody underground in a coffin?
Check it out. Based on tests with a martial arts expert, the build team determined that the greatest force at which a person in a coffin could punch is about 1,450 newtons.
Okay.
Grant, who I guess is a Mythbuster, built a robot that could generate that force with a 3-inch punch. And it was placed inside a plain pine coffin. After 600 punches, the robot had created a crack in the lid, but had not punched a hole in it. The team then placed 6 feet of dirt on top of the coffin. And again, the robot only split the lid and could not create a hole. To test what would happen if a hole could be made, the build team built an acrylic coffin outfitted with a trapdoor and a sliding panel to let dirt in. First, Tori, assumably another Mythbuster, entered the coffin, and 2 feet of dirt were placed on him. He was able to dig himself out. When Grant repeated this experiment with 6 feet of dirt, the dirt entered the coffin so fast and filled it so completely, there was no way that anyone could escape. Based on these results, the myth was declared busted.
Hail Math! I want you to know that if you were listening to Jenny describe that and you started to get, like, short of breath and a little dizzy, I am with you. I got, like, the claustrophobia that I got here in this little closet that I sit in while you described that was actually very real. I literally would never be a part of this experiment. I can barely sit in this tiny closet right now above ground without getting panicky. But I will say that we know that the Slayer has Slayer strength. So what I would like, call back the Mythbusters, please. If we could have the Mythbusters, please call us. We would like to have the robot have Slayer strength and see what's possible there. Because that, you know, vampires are digging themselves out of their own graves often, and they have super strength. And Buffy has super strength. So, you know, a case could be made is all I'll say. To our mathematicians out there, you heard the Newtonian force that the punch was given. Perhaps you can whip up a little equation for us on if Buffy has super strength. We'll call it. What do you think? How many times a human strength does Buffy have? 10?
Yeah, somewhere between 5 and 10. She's like punching people across the room sometimes. Depends what season you're in, you know?
Yeah, so write into us, bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com. Make your subject. This is not about the Backstreet Boys. Just kidding. But definitely write in if you have some math here for us. So I didn't watch the entire director's cut, but I did watch a little bit here and there. It was Marty Noxon and one of the Daves, Greenwalt. Maybe Fury? I don't know. Which Dave? One of the Daves. And Marty were talking, and they commented on how Allison Hannigan is just like this champion crier, and that she, I think, like, the quote that Marty Noxon said was something like, she'll be at, like, the craft services, like, talking about a Butterfinger and sticking gummy bears in her ears, and then she all of a sudden is, like, on set and, like, sobbing her fucking face off. but we get a lot of Willow crying in this episode, and it starts here where, oh, God, this is awful. This is awful. She's waiting on us, on me. Like, this vision that Willow has of having left. I mean, she's not wrong, as it turns out. She is waiting on some fucking body to help her out of the ground. But for Willow, you know, she wants to go back, and Xander has to tell her that the urn broke, remind her that the urn broke. And
she says it was all for nothing. Buffy's really gone. The one way in this group you could be sure that Buffy's about to come back is how many times people say that Buffy's really gone in this episode.
That's the actual magic spell. It's like what is it? Bloody Mary. Oh, God, I won't say it a third time. This front of my iPad is far too reflective for me to say that a third time. But yeah, they just have to say Buffy's gone. And then ba-bam, Buffy's not gone. So, Anya and Tara, so cozy in this episode, you know, just really having some gal pal time.
Wow, yes.
Hiding behind a rock.
One of my favorite forms of foreplay, hiding behind a boulder together. yes.
Tara says, like,
takes me right back to high school.
Tara says, we should stay off the main roads and take alleys if we can. To which I say, Tara,
all you have is alleys.
Yeah, Sunnydale is literally made of only alleys, so you're probably good.
I noticed while I was watching the two Hellions who are hunting for Tara and Anya that the Hellions have more or less the same ears as Frank. They're just positioned slightly different on their heads. But I was definitely like, there's my stupid dog. Look at him go.
The Hellions,
in a motorcycle club.
The Hellions are like, I mean, obviously, like, they've destroyed the Urn of Osiris incidentally and later will, like, dismember the Buffy bot. And they're, like, very violent. And we see that. But they also, like, have these, like, weird other characteristics written to them. Like, for example, the line that the one says to the other, these, like, death motorcycle dudes, is like, you've got a bug up your crack, which just, like, doesn't have the oomph that you'd think the motorcycle guy would have.
No.
And later, in a scene, there's a scene where two of the Hellions are, like, riding. They're chasing after either the Buffy bot or I think it might be actual Buffy. And
it's actual Buffy.
They crash into each other and they fall off their fucking bikes and they, like, leave room for both of them to be like, sorry, I'm sorry. Like, they both apologize to each other. So, you know, maybe
teamwork,
there's hope
makes
for the
dream work.
Yeah.
Kristen. These same Hellions that are looking for Tara and Anya happen to casually mention that they're going to go hit up some stores. And Anya's like, oh, no, not the stores.
Anya's
priorities shift in a millisecond.
Yeah, she was like, oh no, we might die. Wait, bigger concern. They may take some things from the magic box or destroy the magic box. And I just got it, you know? She's like, I literally have only had the magic box for a half of 1 second. Giles is probably still on the plane. So then we go to the Summer's house where Spike and Dawn are. Dawn is like fully me when there's a tornado warning and it's like, stay away from the windows. Like, she's just like,
pressing her eyeballs against the glass. Maybe I can see it. Spike's stressed out to see these Hellions. He clearly is familiar with them. He's looking for weapons, but he's just like burning his hand on crosses and shit. Because there are no weapons. There are only holy water and crosses for some reason.
Right. And they sort of piece together that I think Spike uses his previous knowledge of the Hellions to be like, they only go to places that they know are vulnerable, which they, I mean, there's a lot of like piecing together in this double part premiere. But they piece together.
The whole first half of this second installment is like everybody playing catch up.
Right.
Like,
so they're like, they know, they must know. Word must have finally gotten out that Buffy is actually a robot. Buffy is dead, and that's why the Hellions are here. Dawn wants to stay at home. Spike wants to run. I kind of am with Dawn on this. Like, I just feel like probably staying put was the safer choice since Spike is there.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It seems particularly the safe choice because the Hellions are destroying literally every house on the block except the house that they're in. And if they're passing that one over for some reason, maybe there's some fucking lamb's blood over the front door
or
something.
Yeah, of course. In the classic.
Other preventative measures may have been taken. but, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just go to the basement. Probably.
Go to the basement. You'll be safe down there. Safe enough. So, okay. Buffy is digging again. And she, in this scene, gets free. She's clawed her way through the dirt. Marty Noxon makes a joke about how, like, of course she's crawled her way out through the dirt because there's one leaf in her hair. but I actually, you know, on the flip side, as a viewer, I actually thought that they did a pretty good job here. I mean, obviously you would look a hell of a lot worse if you just crawled through 6 feet of dirt, but I like what they've done with Sarah Michelle Gellar's hair, or, you know, what wig they've chosen for her, that, like, it notably shows growth. It's like not, you know, it's not styled in any way. It's sort of just like a lot of hair.
Interesting how her hair grew while she was dead, but her fingernails did not.
Oh, God. Thank God that they did not make the choice to be realistic in that instance. I'm upset.
Yeah. This hand, the single hand looking like a tree sprouting up from the grave.
Yeah.
I mean, how else would you do it? But I feel like it's worth just mentioning that you get that exact same shot in Kill Bill Part 2 as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's interesting that it's exact. I mean, you know, the hand coming up, yes, but the exactness of
yeah,
the...
Yeah, I mean, they in Kill Bill, they zoom in from kind of like far away.
Mm-hmm.
But once they get to about the same framing, it's just like, boosh.
I would love to like just see a sit down chat between Uma and Sarah. You know, like, what was it like for you to crawl out of your own grave? What was it like for you? You know, what was it like for you to be a woman in Hollywood? You know, just like drawing some lines, making some connections.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
The patriarchy!
Sarah Michelle Gellar, an Emmy, many Emmys for Sarah Michelle Gellar. We're getting facial expressions from her that we've never gotten before on the heels of the finale of season 5, where we got facial expressions we've never gotten from her before. And it's quite incredible. Her face when she surfaces, and really throughout this whole episode, she looks like a scared puppy, truly. Like, she's just so confused and so terrified. Yeah. And she has so many, it's like, obviously the trauma of digging herself out of her own grave is enough, but she also in this episode experiences first this, where she has the trauma of turning around and reading her own headstone. And then later, which we'll talk about when we get there, she also experiences the trauma of seeing herself dismembered by a Hellion group, literally in real time. So this is fucked up. We told you, we warned you, we told you to put your arms up at the peak of the roller coaster last episode.
Yes.
Oh god. Also, can I ask a few questions about Funeral Buffy?
Yes.
Why is she dressed in this fucking thing, in these shoes? Why we are to believe that no one knew that she died in her family, her blood family, apart from Dawn.
Yeah, how'd they get this done?
Right.
Really?
Right. Did they pay off a funeral director to do this?
Demon funeral director, probably. Okay.
So, but I'll give them that. But what I'm really most upset about is, if we're to follow the through line of this narrative, it was Giles, Spike, Willow, Anya, Tara, Dawn. These are the people who said, we would like to have a tiny funeral, a tiny service to say goodbye to our friend, sister, slayer, etc. They chose a black dress that's all frumpy and also these like weird little kitten heels. We've never seen those shoes ever, ever. Why wouldn't they put her in a fucking... I'm upset.
Kristen.
What?
Her funeral outfit is too hot from the ankles down and too frumpy from the ankles up.
I just feel like she doesn't look like the fucking Slayer. And I know why. Like, I know that like from a costuming perspective, when you're creating the show and you want it to be very staggering that she is risen from the grave and it has to be very different from like where we were when we last saw her in season 5. Like, I understand that. I understand. So you don't have to tell me the answer because I know it. But from like an in-universe perspective, I just do not buy that they would not have put her in her Slayer fucking best, you know? That's all. Thank you for letting me rant. You know, like, sometimes a girl just needs to shout.
Yep. Okay, so after she makes her way out of her grave, she takes a little stroll through downtown Sunnydale and sees that everything is on fire and demons are running around on motorcycles.
Yeah.
Fine. Then, Anya and Tara get to the magic box first. And Tara is very, you know, stressed out that Willow is not there yet. Anya is immediately relieved that her beautiful store is intact. Then, once that's out of the way, she's terrified for Xander.
Mm-hmm. I mean, also something that I want to say before we dive into the magic box scene is also that in that scene where Buffy is wandering through Sunnydale on fire, we get a very clear Buffy vision shot. I think that they've happened before that moment, but it's really obvious that we're all looking through her eyes and that her eyes aren't completely focused, having been just repopped into their sockets.
Yeah. It's one of the side effects of having eyes revivified.
Revivified?
Shh.
I would like to give a shout out to Anya's beautiful green velvet jacket. I would like to touch it the way that Tara will soon touch Anya's hair. It's very romantic. I'm just gonna say it. She's like, oh no, what if Willow doesn't find her way back?
We'll have to carry on together alone here.
Sharing and
running the magic box
to get
magic box, if you know what I mean.
I'm hoping that you all heard that over me, but I heard it through my own self, so I think that they probably heard your magic box joke.
Listen. I just want to, in my own defense, say that I just double checked and looked up vivify, and the definition is enliven or animate. So when I said revivify, revivification, whatever the hell I said, I, damn it, refuse you scoffing at my word choice.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I always assume that if we are in a debate about what a word means, you are correct. So that's fair.
Oh, thank you.
Something that I want to say about this scene that I really liked was that Tara and Anya have, apart from, you know, the romantic hair stroking, was that Tara and Anya have this exchange where Tara says, to sort of calm Anya down, if something happened to Willow, I would know, right? And that's rooted, we think, in, oh, well, Tara is a witch and Willow's a witch, so, like, they would be able to sense that. But then she continues and finishes that sentence, and she says, so would you. And I just thought that was really, like, a powerful thing. I don't think that it's rooted in, you know, Anya being an ex-demon. I think she's trying to say, like, we love our people so deeply that we would know if something happened to them. And it wasn't rooted in witchcraft at all. So I thought that that was really nice.
And something has happened to their people, but it's not death. They're just doing donuts in the woods, following a blimp in the sky instead of a star.
Do you think that was really a blimp, or did Xander just want to correct something to feel a little bit better about himself?
Very possible.
Like,
also,
what's...
how do you even identify... Blimps don't get high up enough to look like the size of a plane. Okay.
I don't think that they do. And also, like, a Sunnydale blimp, what's it blimping around about?
Goodyear tires, baby.
I guess they sell Goodyear tires everywhere, even in Sunnydale. Willow is like, oh, but look over there. What is that glowing thing? And it is a Tinkerbell that Tara has sent to Willow using magic. I've gotten really interested now in, like, looking up a lot of these spells and who they're referencing, you know? And I'll say that this is pretty surface research, so I would really love to hear from those of you who are more versed in Wicca and in the history of witchcraft. But I looked up Aradia. Aradia, I believe, is how Tara pronounces it. I don't know if that is the correct pronunciation. And I sort of, like, really did fall down this rabbit hole. I'm so sorry, Anya, for saying rabbit hole so many times. But I learned that Aradia, or Aradia, however we say it, was the principal figure in a book written by this guy, Charles Godfrey Leland. He was a folklorist. This book was written in 1899. He believed it to be a genuine religious text that was used by a group of pagan witches in Tuscany. And so Aradia is a main character portrayed as a messiah sent to earth in order to teach the oppressed peasants how to perform witchcraft to use against the Roman Catholic Church and the upper classes. So that I was like, well, that's interesting. But then I found out that this book, Aradia, the Gospel of the Witches, became one of the primary sources for neo-paganism half a century later. So I'm just saying, like, I all I did was, like, peek at a couple of the little folded over pages in this book. And I would love, some of you are probably listening to this, you're furious with me because you already know the story and I've probably fucked up three quarters of it. But I just want to know more about Aradia. I just want to know a little bit more. So if you want to tell me more, write in. So when Tara calls on Aradia to make her little Tinkerbell, picture Kristen in her living room, like, just furiously flipping through digital pages of Wiccan history.
having freshly watched the Wendy Vicani episode of
Oh my God, Wendy Wiccany. What an episode of television. If you don't watch Pen 15, you don't know what I'm talking about or what Jenny's talking about, but Wendy Wiccany really called me the fuck out on who I was in middle school. Okay, moving right along. Jenny, something that you talked about the North Star and the blimp and the airplane, and we've talked about yes. Tinkerbell, but another really important part of the scene, and this goes back to what I was referencing at the top of the episode, is Xander in this scene with Willow saying, and this isn't the first time he said it, why didn't you tell us? Like, a fucking snake came out of your fucking mouth. Like, that was not your average everyday spell, and you didn't prepare us at all. Why? What did we do over there?
Yeah, I mean, I get where he's coming from, but also I feel like everyone is like, you all did a spell to bring someone back from the dead, and you are shocked at the fact that, like, the immediate consequences were, like, a little more dramatic than a regular spell.
Yeah, I will give you that point. But I do think that, like, if you're going to have three people in a circle with you and you know that, like, possibly you will be tested by being, like, cut or by throwing up a snake or anything, like, she only told Tara. Like, that's what we learned. And she didn't even tell Tara much, but she was just like, I will be tested. She didn't even tell Anya and Xander that she would be tested at all.
Yeah.
They could have accidentally dropped their candle. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta prepare these people.
I get the sense that Willow was not entirely sure if whether or not this casting would be beyond her, and that she didn't want anybody to come up with any reasons for why she shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So Buffy is continuing to walk around through the streets. She leans on a car, sets off a car alarm. On a good day, that's very upsetting. And yeah, on a bad day, when your ears were just underground for 5 months, it's even worse. A guy comes out of the house with a shotgun.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense because it literally the town is burning around him and there are scary motorcycle demons everywhere, but...
But also, Buffy is very noticeably not a large motorcycle dude. You know, like, it is, like, I mean, I guess it's just supposed to be that he's in such a panic that he's not even looking. He's just like, I hear my car alarm and you're not getting in this house. I'm protecting it, but.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, hey, props to this guy for not underestimating a tiny blonde woman.
True. Good point. Hi, I would like to play a jingle for this moment where Spike walks out into the middle of the goddamn road in his fucking duster leather coat and at full clip knocks this fucking hellion off of his moving motorcycle. It is hot.
Spike, I love you. Spike, so dreamy. Spike, you trench coat.
Question for what I can only imagine is our massive motorcycle enthusiast listenership.
Mm-hmm.
If a motorcycle was separated from its rider and then skidded across some asphalt in this fashion, would it then, do you think, like, what are the chances that it would still be in drivable shape? I'm just wondering. It seems like
I think he took risk, you know? I think he took a risk and it worked out for him in the end. I thought the same thing, but I think he knew. I think he knew this could go one of two ways. And luckily it went the way that he wanted it to, because then we get to hear him say, "Let's fly, pigeon." What a line.
I love that even in these circumstances, he made sure to source a helmet
for
Dawn.
It's
very cute.
It's very cute. We also saw this moment of Spike and Dawn on the back with the little fucking football helmet or whatever the hell it is on her head in the credits, that I was like, that's interesting that it's in the credits because it doesn't happen until the second episode. I realize now the error of my ways. Of course, it was given to you all in one helping.
Yes, yes. It was also really nice before they made the run for the motorcycle. It was great to see Spike watching the hellions, like, ride their motorcycles across, like, somebody's porch and, like, breaking windows and stuff. And he just, like, gets this, like, really, like, wistful gleam in his eye. Like, he's like, wow, that could be us, but I made a promise to a dead girl. You know?
Yeah. Oh, Spike. So Anya, bringing the comedy, always, literally always here to give us a slight chuckle or a giant laugh. The knock at the door, she responds, "Already been looted, sorry."
Yeah, it's weird that Xander, like, waits a long time to identify himself.
Yeah. He was, you know why? He knows... He knows his girlfriend, his fiance. He knows she needed time to get her punchline in. Then he's like,
Xander. Yep. Very thoughtful.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your three-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey, Kristen.
Oh, hey, Jenny.
You know how we're always obtaining new lotions and creams for our faces?
You know, I really do. We talk about skincare more than anyone probably has a right to know.
It's true. If you, like us, are tired of cycling through ineffective skincare trends and overcomplicated routines, then let us tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multiple-step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
And here's the deal. The reason that OneSkin is very different from anything else is because they use a proprietary OS1 peptide. If there was time, I would play the medical doctor jingle for myself just for saying that. It's the first ingredient that is proven to actually switch off the aging cells that cause the lines and the wrinkles and the thinning skin. And they have a bunch of studies to back this up. We've both received their products and just started using them, and they are awesome. I also love the fact that they come with refillable inserts. So you sort of get your plastic container one time, and then if you like the product and you keep going, they just send you the little packet that goes inside. So if you want to learn more about them, you should check them out at oneskin.co. They are the world's first skin longevity company. They focus on cellular aspects of aging and keep your skin looking and acting healthier for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code BUFFERING at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code BUFFERING. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Okay, so Scooby Squad is mostly assembled, but Dawn and Spike are not answering the phone. And Anya makes an incredible point.
Yes.
When it is suggested that they head back out into the fray. Giles is gone. Spike is missing. Willow is looking pretty worse for the wear. Mm-hmm. And Buffy is, they think, dead. With what firepower exactly should they be re-entering the fray? One wonders.
Yeah, I wrote that exact thing, Jenny. Anya, making great points. And like Xander kind of quips back at her to make her feel a bit stupid. And I'm like, dude, seriously? Like, she is making all the sense. How are you going to fight? It's not smart that they go back out. You know, it all works out at the end. Like, it's kind of, but it's not good that they go back out. I don't think. And the other thing that I want to talk about in this scene is that Xander has this moment where he's like, blickety blah, NORAD, blickety blah, DEFCON 1. And everybody looks at him and they're confused. And he makes this comment about how he needs some more guy friends, which womp womp, patriarchy, jingle, clap, thunder, blah, blah, blah. But He then says, all right, I didn't really like this guy at work. He seems pretty great. His name's Tito. And I'm just like, I would like to see it. I would like to see just a tiny little spinoff, a little mini up of Xander and Tito, you know, like figuring out how to be pals. That's all.
Yes. Tito and the Xand. It's got a zippy little theme tune.
Tito and the Xand.
They're both wrapping up their day at the construction site. And then they each have circuitous ways that they take to a shared apartment where there are roommates, and there are hijinks along the way, like a dog chases Tito, and Xander is walking by a fire hydrant, and like the cap pops off, and he's like, oh no, I got all wet. And then they finally arrive home, crack a couple of beers, sit down on the couch together, and watch an episode of TV.
Tito and the Xand. Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. I don't know why you subscribe to this podcast, but I subscribe for live written fanfic by Jenny Owen Youngs.
I'm here with a pitch, you know?
Do you know that, I'm going to regret saying this, but do you know that the U.S. has never been in DEF CON 1?
What does it mean?
It's the level of readiness. It's like there's a DEF CON 1 through 5, I believe. It's level of readiness for the U.S. Armed Forces. I believe in the Cuban Missile Crisis, we got to DEF CON 2. DEF CON 1 is basically the most ready we can be for attack, defense, wow, whatever you want to call it.
Well, just keep knocking on that wood.
I know. I like wrote it in my notes and then was like, maybe you don't want to say that. Sorry, everyone.
So the Hellions are like our new home. And then one of them breathes fire, which is, they do like circus stuff. Yeah. Actually, you know who breathes fire like this all the time is Xena, warrior princess. Xena did it first. Then they all jump up and they're like, hip, hip, hooray, like with their arms in the air and shit. They really lose a lot of cred for me in this scene while they're celebrating Sunnydale being their new home. It just seems a little tonally off.
I didn't want to risk interrupting any of your Hellion impersonations, but I am wondering, I've never seen Xena, Warrior Princess, and so... I know, big reveal here, buffering the Vampire Slayer, but I'm wondering what you mean when you say Xena does this all the time. Does she do this trick?
She's like, yeah, like probably 5 times in season 1 alone. She's always like in a bar being underestimated, then she'll take a big swig of alcohol, pull a torch off the wall, and fucking spit fire into people's faces. And for the first first 3 or 4 this. Seasons, Lucy Lawless was doing the stunt herself. And then after a certain point, they were like, okay, we really need to start having
a stunty stand in for you. Door.
Yeah, that's right. Lucy Lawless also, there's an episode I saw recently where she is in a sort of like dungeon and she's hogtied and a sea of rats pour in to where she's being held, and she, because she's Xena, warrior princess, fights them all off with her mouth. And there are like multiple times where she like has a rat in her mouth and she's shaking them, and they are like real dead rats, and Lucy Lawless really had them in her mouth because she is very serious.
I don't know how I feel right now. I'm like exactly down the middle, repulsed and turned on. It's like a very weird feeling.
I know. It's also Dana Scully, Gillian Anderson eats a bug on the X-Files, so there's that too. There's a lot out there to have your day really brought to a screeching halt by.
Wow. We started with women digging themselves out of graves, and now we've got women fucking chewing on rats and eating bugs. All in a day's work here at Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
Yes.
Woo!
Yes. Okay. So, bad news for Buffy Bot.
Yeah.
When you move to a housewarming, there's always a housewarming when you move to a new place, and the only suitable housewarming for these demons is quartering the Buffy Bot. And hey, I went to medieval times a handful of times as a kid, and there was a special section where you could pay like $1 to go through, and it was just full of like torture devices.
What?
Yeah, there was like the rack and like, you know, that like spiky cage and and all of that kind of business.
Fun for kids.
I was like really fixated on that when I was a child for some reason. Mm-hmm. And One thing that I learned about maybe adjacently or maybe in the walkthrough there with all the little informational plaques. So quartering, which was part of the capital punishment visited upon treasonous. Those who committed treason in England, starting around 1283, it was performed much like what we see here, except with horses instead of motorcycles.
How much horsepower does a motorcycle have?
I'm going to leave that for our listenership. Please write in at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com. Let us know how much horsepower a motorcycle has. Thank you.
I thought it was quite interesting, actually. I wouldn't have thought of this if it wasn't for our conversation on Osiris in last episode. But I thought it was quite interesting that Osiris was the god called upon to resurrect Buffy, and that we learned that Osiris himself was dismembered, and that we see the Buffybot dismembered. I doubt that it was intentional, but I just thought, like, I was thinking about you, Jenny, making your joke about, like, find yourself a girl who will, like, find all the parts of you, put them back together, and resurrect you.
Yeah.
And so I just thought it was interesting.
By that motto.
The real devastation, I mean, whatever. There's devastation. It's season six. Pick a direction and look in it. There'll be devastation. But this is awful because, as I mentioned earlier, Buffy herself is looking at the Buffybot. Buffybot is looking at Buffy the moment that this happens. And so, I mean, what the fuck?
And the worst thing, I think, is that she yells Buffy, but you can't hear it at all.
Right.
But, like, it's very clear that by the motion of her mouth that she's calling to Buffy. Oh.
Ugh, really? Not okay. Buffy runs, like I would, or any of us would, I'm sure, facing a similar situation. This is where the bikers are very polite. So sorry that I knocked you off your bike, sir. And then we get to this sort of like alley scene. This is where the fight between the Hellions and the Scoobies is going to happen. And Tara making, you know, a point. This is a very like Kristen Russo kind of a point. Maybe it didn't work because it wasn't supposed to. Maybe we should consider that it wasn't supposed to work. Well, maybe you're right, Tara. Maybe you're not. But in walks Buffy.
Bum, bum, bum. Was that dramatic enough?
Yeah. That's definitely the music cue, I think, could be put right in the show. It would add up.
Bad sign that Tara says maybe the fates, you know, sent this destruction to, like, prevent this. And Willow interprets that as, so this is my fault.
Yeah, Willow is... Willow's really going through something. We'll just say that.
Also, right before Buffy drops down, Anya's like arguing with Xander, like, maybe now is a great time to announce our engagement because everyone seems like they could really use a pick-me-up, especially Willow.
Oh my God, Anya, like, bless her. This joke of, like, I mean, she literally, in the next moment where, like, Buffy is fully traumatized, cannot talk, and they're like, what do we do? Anya's like, Buffy, I have something to tell you. Something great has happened.
Incredible news.
They realize in this moment, because they sort of like call to her, she runs away, and she doesn't even like run away, she just like runs up against the wall, which is really very upsetting to see. She doesn't know what to do with herself. She doesn't know like how to escape this. And they realize in this moment that, of course, the spell did work, and that perhaps before even doing the spell, they should have considered digging the coffin up, because if it had worked, what was their plan if it had worked anyway? You know, like,
I think they were just expecting her to like rematerialize
in front of them
with them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Also, everyone for some reason is like, kind of yell talking, like thinking that she can't hear them, which I feel like is a bad tactic.
But it is true.
Well, sort of. But it's like I know she's like getting her senses back to their full capacity. But like,
yeah,
I just, yelling is not the answer.
In general, this is a very rough transition for Buffy, who would have had a very rough transition anyway. But she sort of is like, dug herself out of her grave directly into a Hellion fight with her town on fire and her friends in all sorts of disarray. And they, you know, say you're home now, we brought you back. It's not the last time we will hear people saying that Buffy is home now. And then, of course, the Hellions are like, party town.
Tara does a fireball thing and Razor just seems like very high. His reaction is just like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, you know, per Anya's last email, they probably should not have left because they really are not working with a lot of firepower, even with Buffy now alive, because Buffy has no idea where the fuck she is. Xander is, you know, posturing, I have happened to be a very powerful man witch myself. And we get a little light comedy, which is nice. Also, Did you check out Anya, who last episode told everybody that they didn't know anything about zombies, using her own misknowledge to try to scare Razor? She's like, this Slayer might want to eat some brains here.
Yep. And then, you know, Willow's like, I got magic. And Razor's like, what are you going to do? Pull a rabbit out of a hat? And Anya is horrified.
Why would she do that?
Why would you do that?
Oh, God. You hear us. We laugh, you know, because we must. Because if we don't, what else will there be?
We shall cry.
I'm not going to discuss the thing that the Hellion says to them here. But this is really, really upsetting and sort of like ties into that first line where we're like, OK, so we've moved to the UPN. But also, what else is going on in this season right now? Because it's just feeling that what the Hellions say to them about what they're going to do to them is something that, like, I feel we have not really ever heard in so direct a way in this entire show so far.
No, I don't know if I've ever heard anything so heinous on like a network show.
It's pretty fucking bad, and I would like to not have it. I would like for it to be gone. So thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway, Buffy does something really cool. I don't know if there's a name for this move, but she catches the Hellion's fist in her palm and pushes it back. Hot. Love that move.
Hell yeah. Yeah, she kicks the crap out of this guy. And then there's a moment where everyone's like, so we knocked Razor down. Does that mean the fight is over? It is not. Scoobies and Motorcycle Club clash. Cool jackets, everybody. I wish I could be in a motorcycle club for the cool jackets, but without responsibilities or having to ride a motorcycle. That would be great.
So you just want to buy a jacket?
Please start a no motorcycle motorcycle club that I can join. Thank you. The No Motorcycle Motorcycle Club, which, of course, in our clubhouse, we prominently display large photographs of clothed nudes exclusively decorate the No Motorcycle Motorcycle Club clubhouse.
I'm telling you what, I would like to have a No Motorcycle Motorcycle Club jacket now that you've done all that yammering about, Jenny Owen Young.
Yammering about?
Positive yammering. I'm reclaiming the word yammering. I'm making it positive.
Okay.
Okay, so Dawn finds the Buffy bot. Dawn, I love you. Dawn, you're perfect. Dawn, I was trying to remember the Cordelia lyrics. I really fucking love Dawn. And this girl has been through so fucking much already. Now she's like down with the Buffy bot. And you know what? Like, probably a lot of people would have thought that, like, okay, the Buffy bot has been, like, dismembered and probably is just speaking nonsense. Dawn, like, knows enough about the Buffy bot, I posit, that she fucking understands what the fuck she is saying and puts it all together in her little Dawn head.
Yes, totally. Also, the Buffy bot says Dawn a bunch of times here, which I thought was interesting because when April the robot was powering down for the last time, the last thing she said was, it's always darkest before.
I got full body chills. I'm sorry. I had to pause. Just pause and let the chills wash over me.
Sure.
Yeah. My you're my sister Dawn. And then, you know, this, the way that they write the Buffy bot's lines, I just think is really powerful. Like, she's saying, where did I go? I was here, but then I ran away. Not me, the other Buffy. Like, where did I go? Because at first, it is a misdirect, because when you first hear her say, where did I go? You just think that she's, like, powering down. It's just really beautiful. I'm sad to see the Buffy bot go. I really... rest in peace, Buffy bot. You saved the world a little, you know? Can we get her a little... Can we get her a little headstone? And Dawn runs, and she doesn't know where the fuck she's running, but she runs. And back in the alley, Tara, again, why were you concerned? There's so many. Buffy has a bloody lip, and Xander is like, you know, she's Buffy. She's back again. She's fighting. And Buffy is like, no, I'm not okay at all. And she runs as well. So now Dawn and Buffy both running. Where possibly will they run to?
I know where they might be headed. I know where they might go. That rickety-ass tower.
Yeah, I learned a couple of things. I learned that some of the scenes shot on the tower, probably most of them in The Gift, but maybe some here, was a scaffolding built around an oil rig.
Oh.
Which is pretty cool. And then the entirety of the scene we see on the tower between Dawn and Buffy is a... it's built on the stage with hydraulics, so it's actually moving, and the background of the city is like a I don't remember what they call it, but it's like a massive photograph that has lights coming from behind it, so it looks like so I thought that was very fun. But anyway, yes, the rickety tower, they're headed there while Willow obfuscates
obfuscates
a demon. Nice.
She freezes razors and then they go
shatter. Cool, that's pretty cool. Good tricks. Willow's got some good tricks in her bag.
You know, his retribution for losing his little razors is choking Willow. But never choke a witch's girlfriend when there's an axe nearby, that the old adage goes.
Yes, of course. Sorry to bring Marty Noxon into this one more time, but one of my favorite moment of the little bit of the director's cut that I saw is Marty Noxon is like, yeah, this is like where we made Tara butch. And then she goes, no, I mean, that's the wrong way to say it. We just blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, Marty, that is the
own
correct.
It, Marty.
You actually nailed it on first pass. Tara is like straight up. She's like killed. And I guess she had spoken to one of the Davids about how, very similar to Cordelia, she really doesn't get to kill a lot of demons, you know? And so she gets her moment here. She fucking axes the Hellion into oblivion, and she says, nobody messes with my girl.
That's right. Meanwhile, Buffy is up on the tower, and as an avid fan of the show Buffy the Vampire Slayer, she is reliving the finale of Series 5, mouthing along her lines, doing a whole bit. Something that is hilarious about this scene to me is that if you watch it on Hulu with the, you know, modern aspect ratio, every time Buffy looks down, you see Dawn in red all the way at the left of the screen walking in the same line. I think you see it 3 times, but at least two of those times are when Dawn is up on top of the tower with Buffy. They just got one overhead shot and reused it multiple times.
Oh, I watched the DVD, so I didn't get to see that, but I will gladly go back and find Tiny Dawn walking down
there.
Check
it out.
Yeah, so this is pretty intense. There is an obvious inversion of what we saw on The Gift, where at the end of The Gift, of course, Buffy says, live for me. And here we are seeing Dawn saying to Buffy, live for me. Very intense situation. Very, I think a very good job done here by Michelle Trachtenberg in this scene. And sort of like conveying the fact that she's very small and she misses her sister and she needs her to stay. And you can see, I think what I like about Michelle Trachtenberg's performance, or, you know, the lines written for Dawn or the combination therein, is that it seems that Dawn is very self-aware of the fact that she's asking for something for herself. She is under no impression that she's asking for Buffy to stay, to be with her for Buffy's sake. She's very much aware that, like, she needs her and she's just pleading with her. Please don't go again. I can't believe that you're back. I don't know how it happened, but you're here. Please stay with me. And Buffy, I mean, we don't really know what's going on with Buffy, but the very first words that she speaks are, "Is this hell?"
Buffy is like literally all of us to real life.
I know.
In 2020.
I was going to say literally hashtag fucking 2020. Is this? So this seems to be hell. Am I correct or incorrect? And
yeah,
you know,
all the telltale, helltale signs are here.
Dawn's like, "I cannot confirm nor deny, but it is home." And we're like, "Okay."
Sounds right.
Could be hell, but it's also home. And, you know, ultimately the thing that gets Buffy to turn again in a replay of the end of The Gift is that the tower is about to fall and she wants to save Dawn. I would like to just gently remind us of the IMDb description. Buffy climbs out of her own grave to save her friends. Okay, cool. yeah, and I, you know, obviously, or I would assume obviously at this point we're gonna learn more, and sometimes it's hard for us to I think have these conversations without spoilers. This is like one of those moments where, you know, I have more that I want to say, but I need to get more information before I can say it. And I believe we will learn more, and I think at this point it is very hard to know what is happening here, apart from that we have a very confused and very traumatized Buffy, and that the tower, good job on that tower standing for 3 fucking months. Great work. Great work.
5 months, actually.
5 months. Oh, my.
Yeah. So once this tower really starts to come apart and debris starts to fall, Buffy snaps into protecto mode. She snaps back into some semblance of Buffiness.
Yeah.
They ride a winch halfway down. It was just one winch. Then they fall the rest of the way. Then the entire tower collapses.
You are such a wonderful asshole.
Thank you.
It was just one winch. She wrote in her notes, getting more and more excited to reach the moment when she would deliver the joke onto the ears.
Oh, are you going to roast me for caring about the quality of my performance here? The hell?
I'll tell you what, why don't we go from just one winch over into the Sexual Fucking Tension Awards?
Well, it's time for the Sexual Tension Awards, and we have some very exciting nominees for you. I can guarantee that every single slot in the noms has a name that starts with T and is 4 letters long.
Slot in the noms is very upsetting.
In the first slot in the noms.
Wow.
In the first slot in the noms.
Come on!
He seems like such a cool guy, and he always wears really nice coveralls while he's doing construction.
It's like, I wrote these and I don't even know who the fuck you're talking about.
It's Tito and Xander, of course. Xander wants to get to know Tito a little bit better.
Tito and the Zand.
Two contractors, measure twice and cut once, 1080 PhD. In the second slot for noms, we've got Tara and Anya as they hide behind a rock together, crouched intimately. In the third slot for noms, we've got Tara and Anya as Tara strokes Anya's hair so familiarly. And in the fourth slot for noms, we've got Tara and Willow as Tara Butchley axes a demon in the back. And, you know, when we say Butchley, we mean it in the Brittany Ashley, Laura Zach, Butch off.
It's an energy.
Sensibility.
It's an energy.
Yeah, it's an energy. It's not limited to presentation. And look at her go. So if you'd like to be a part of slotting in these noms.
I like tried so hard to like be the like to parent this situation by ignoring it the last three times and it didn't work.
Go ahead and slot in your nom at our on our Twitter poll at Buffering Cast. Sexual Tension Award poll will be up for 1 week. Thanks a lot. Yay, democracy.
Okay, guess what? It's season six, and it's harder and harder and harder to figure out how to nominate people for Sexual Tension Awards, but we will always bring you
slots and noms.
Okay. So the pulley is like, squeak, and then the fucking screw is like, squirk, and then they drop, and then they got close enough to the ground for, like, it to be okay that they drop the rest of the way, and they fall on, like, some drywall or whatever, and then the tower comes crashing, and Buffy rolls them away. It's very Indiana Jones for the last, like, moment here, and then they hug, and I think in the moment that, like, got me the most was this last one, which I guess is probably the way you want it to work on television. But Dawn hugs Buffy and she's just saying, "You're home." And her squeaky little Dawn voice, you know, "You're home." And Buffy over Dawn's shoulder is sort of like,
she does not know. She looks like, doesn't look like anything to me. That's how she is receiving this information.
Exactly. So this is how on October 2nd, 2001, is that right? Was it the 2nd of October?
Yes. Oh, yes.
That is how you ended your evening. We're taping this on October 7th, so it's not even that far away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's rare for us to line up. We have holidays in all the wrong places here at Buffering the Vampire Slayer. But hey, we've hit October bingo. October Yahtzee here in Buffering land. So that's another episode. Hey, we've done two, Jenny. Only 20 more to go.
Hey, and then 22 after that. Hey,
and then we'll start at the beginning again.
Yay. Well. I'm Jenny Wynn Youngs, and you know, in addition to making this podcast, I make a podcast called Veronica Mars Investigations, and I also write and release songs. You can learn more about me and those songs at jennyowenyoungs.com. I will tell you that I just put out an extended version of my EP Night Shift, featuring some new remixes and a Teenage Dream cover. Also just released a new music video for my song Vampire Weeknight, which is a very, very cool animated video that I am so excited about. You can find that in the places where people post videos. And hey, if you want to talk to me about slots and noms, you can always tweet at Jenny Owen Youngs. Thanks.
You know, I hope that you get all the tweets about slots and fucking noms and then you regret your decision.
Okay, question for you, Kristen. Nick Lachey, slot or nom?
Nom.
Nick Carter, slot or nom?
Slot.
Correct. Such a correct set of answers.
I am Kristen Russo, and you can learn all about what I do, which is battle Jenny Owen Youngs for control over the language used in this podcast on my website, kristinnoline.com. That's KristinNoeline. You can use that spelling to find me on Twitter and on Instagram. Please don't talk to me about these words in those places if you care about me at all. Also, Jenny, I asked you to submit a biography for our website, bufferingthevampireslayer.com, very recently, and you didn't. And so I made up my own bio, and you should just go fucking look at it yourself right now, because that's what you get for not doing your own work.
I really did start writing it last night. It's just not done yet. But let me see what you've slotted in. Let me see what you've nommed as my bio. Okay. Jenny Wen Youngs is a professional musician and recreational Whedonverse aficionado. She did not submit her bio as asked, so Kristen is writing the rest of this for now. She likes to write songs while washing the dishes and has a dog named Frank, and once she left Kristen in the woods with an angry bear. It's all true. It's all true.
Oh, anyway, Jenny, apart from buffering the vampireslayer.com, where they can find your glorious bio written by me, where else could they find us?
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at BufferingCast, or drop us an email at BufferingTheVampireSlayer@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 216-30-BUFFY.
Hell yeah. You can support the work that we do here in a few places. You can support Buffering the Vampire Slayer on Patreon at patreon.com/bufferingcast. You can find that, of course, on our website, bufferingthevampireslayer.com. You can also now learn about LaToya Ferguson hosting Angel on Top on that same site, bufferingthevampireslayer.com. And if you go to angelontop.com, it'll take you to the Angel on Top Patreon page where you can support LaToya directly. We hope that you enjoyed last week's premiere episode of Angel on Top. We know we had a fucking delight making it and are so stoked.
Oh, hell yeah.
So fucking stoked that LaToya is here. We're going to learn so much this season about Angel and the WWWB. Ha! You can also, hey, we have new merch. We have t-shirts.
What?
That say Burn It Down, designed by A. Andrews. We have a Sleepaway Witch Camp pullover sweatshirt for when you need to get cozy with the girl that's dating that guy that Anya and Tara. You get it. It's fine. Just go get the sweatshirt. You can find all of our merch at BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com. Just click on shop. We have a US-based store and a European store as well. So yeah, go to those places, check out those things. And hey, if you want, you can always rate and review us on iTunes or elsewhere. We love it. We love to hear from you.
Or elsewhere, in your journal, whatever.
Yeah, in your diary, you know, text your friends.
Yeah. You know, till next time.
Sluts and Noms.
Every night, my sacred callings to bring the fight to vampires and demons. So says my programming. The curtain fell, I was done. But there's no choice for the chosen one. Seems I'll forever be scouring cemeteries and all my living friends. Trying to pretend I'm real. When they look at me, all that they can see is somebody who was long gone. When they look at me, all that they can see is somebody it hurt to miss. Dug my way up through the dirt, clawing and climbing for all I'm worth, up to a burning world. My vision dimmed and blurred, night stretches endlessly on. Don't know if I'll ever see the dawn. Keep fighting, keep breathing. So says my programming. And for my living friends, I'm trying to pretend I'm real. When see is somebody who is long gone. When I look at me, all that I can see is somebody who it hurts to, hurts to miss. I gave what I had to give, gave you my only gift. I let go, but you never did.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.